Hey everyone, my name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. And before I interview them, I spend about 20 minutes just busting their chops, making sure that I get as much detail as possible. And before that, Ari DeSermo, our producer, spends an hour with them going through their story. And before that, Andrea Schumann goes and researches them. So we do a lot to make sure the guests are a good fit. The thing that I don't want to do is just stick with the highly venture-backed entrepreneurs who then end up selling their companies, because I think we end up with a very, very false sense of how business works. Now, those are easy to check, right? Before I had Airbnb on, I could easily confirm that everything they were going to tell me was honest and true and that, you know, it's out there. When there's someone who's not an Airbnb, I think their story is maybe even more important to hear, but it takes more research. And I say all that because Jordan, who you're about to meet, just spent about 20 minutes going over a story with me, having me research it in real time. And as I said, the rest of the team worked on it too. And the story here is about a former emu rancher, emu rancher, who ended up creating a development shop that built apps for, at first, small to medium-sized companies, and later on, enterprise businesses. The company was called Chamber Development Services, and his name is Jordan Bryant, and I invited him here to talk about how he got his clients, how he was able to build apps for them, considering that he's not like the pro developer, and also why he ended up selling this business and what he sold it for. This whole interview is sponsored by two companies. The first, you already know, right? Frankly, at this point, if you're looking to hire a great developer, you can say it over and over in your own, in my voice, probably in your head, TopTal. The second is a company you probably have never heard of, but it helps companies like mine grow their email lists and get more subscribers and so on. It's called Viral Sweep, and I'll tell you how I'm using them to grow our subscribers. But I'll tell you more about those later. First, Jordan, good to have you here.
Yeah, thank you, Andrew. I really appreciate it.
Was it a little awkward that I just, like, I said you're on, but let's make sure you belong on and you're really on?
Yeah, I mean, now the pressure's kind of on, right?
Yeah, because you know what? I couldn't see your website. It wasn't live. You sold your company to someone else, but your old website didn't redirect to the new business. The whole thing was just, like, really hard to confirm. But I appreciate your openness about what happened with the business, how you did. It wasn't the huge mega success, but it was a success for sure. And I want to find out about it. I want to learn from it. Actually, I said it was a success for sure. Do you feel like this was a big success, Chamber DS?
I set the bar really high for myself. So in my mind, it wasn't a massive success, but definitely it was a great learning opportunity. And I did have some success that I could use as a springboard into the next thing. So yeah, I'd say it was a success.
The emu thing, I was smiling as I said, it's your dad who had your parents who had an emu ranch, but you really had emus. What are emus actually?
Yeah. So emus are like a 6-foot bird, right? It's like the size of a human. And it's like my childhood was like Jurassic Park, essentially. It's just like these velociraptors just roaming around in these big 5-foot tall reeds.
And they're very hairy faced.
Yeah. Yeah. And they have long blue necks. And the females actually make this deep bass sound at night. So you can actually hear it from like a football field away. Okay. It's interesting upbringing.
So all night long you would have that, and your first taste of entrepreneurship came when your dad sent you out to sell jerky.
Yeah, so we raised emus, we slaughtered them, and we turned them into products. So we had jerky, chapsticks, lotions, a bunch of different things. And my family, they're just a bunch of jocks. So we were very highly engaged with the sports community. So yeah, we'd go to these sporting events, and I would go around and sell emu jerky and chapsticks and lotions. And that's really where I got my first taste of how to communicate, sell products, value exchange, you know, the whole biz.
Is it weird as a kid to go around selling to people emu, your parents' stuff?
You know, I guess I didn't really see it like that because I didn't know any better. Like I hadn't really been influenced by society of like, oh, it's selling with the bad connotations. But I saw my dad doing it. And so, of course, you know, I wanted to follow along in his footsteps. So I thought it was just like a cool exercise or thing that I could do to relate to my dad.
I did weird things like that. I mean, it's not weird. It's just weird compared to what your friends are doing. They're all going home and hanging out. A few of them have jobs, but they're like proper jobs at the mall or something. And I did two things that were a little weird. One was I was handing out flyers for my dad's store. And the other was I sold sandwiches and drinks door to door at stores. You know, the store owners couldn't go out to get food, and the food that was available to them was not especially healthy. So I sold that door to door. And I remember one time as I did that, a girl who I was into in school, who was a year older, saw me. I said, what do I do at this point? I'm selling sandwiches here. This is not cool. So I opened up the cooler and I offered her soda, and it was a little weird. But for you, it was just like what your dad did and what your mom – did your mom do it too?
Yeah, it was a whole family thing. I have a little sister as well. Yeah, and I mean at that time I was like 10, 11, 12. It was literally since I was born till I was about 16. That was my whole life on that ranch.
Okay.
So yeah, very, very young age for sure.
All right.
How old were you when you were doing the door-to-door?
I was doing it in late high school and then through college because I made more money doing that than I would have at a job. And then I finally felt like I stored $20,000 in the bank. I got to that level and there was nothing else I could really do. I felt like I couldn't use the money. I tried to figure out how I could invest in real estate because I was listening to these radio guys who talked about how it's so easy to invest in real estate. So I'd buy their books and I try to do it, but I keep getting laughed at as like a teenager. And Even in my family, people weren't going to help me with it. So I said, you know, I think I'm not going to benefit as much from getting another $10,000 in the bank as I would if I went and worked even for free and learned more. And so I went to work for a Wall Street broker, Stephanie Winston, and I did it for free. And then I went to work for a headhunter, Paul Cerbera, and I got paid. It was definitely a come down in money for both of those positions, but I learned a whole lot more and it set me on a different path and it was worth it.
Yeah.
It's good being entrepreneurial as a kid. I remember like people would worry about like even a $5 meal. And I thought $5 meal, I make that every minute when I'm selling. That's nothing. I would like have pockets full of cash, you know, and it's not that much money. We're talking about over 5 years, I saved $20,000, but it does feel very powerful to be able to do it.
Yeah, it just changes your perspective, right? Your world grows beyond what your small little world becomes bigger.
I had this cool experience where in college, someone was fighting over a beer. Who should have paid for it? This girl was in an argument with this guy. And I said, you know what? I got the money here. Let me pay for it. And that just quieted everyone down that I could pay for the freaking beer. So did you get to keep the money from the emu chapstick and everything else?
No, it was just kind of like the family thing. And like I wasn't old enough to even understand really the value of it.
All right.
Yeah, but then when I was a 19-year-old, that's where I got into my first real business venture. And it's for one of those – the College Works painting, like the college painting internships.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So that's where
that's I where somebody went. Pays you and other college students to paint their homes?
Yeah, essentially. Yep. Okay. And so it was kind of an internship, but I managed the whole business. Went door to door, knocked on 1,000 doors before I got my first lead. Never painted a house in my life. And in that summer, those couple months, I did about 140 grand in revenue, painted like 55 homes, was one of the top in the nation. And that's where I really got just the bug for just doing business. And from there, I jumped into other stuff. So
I remember selling sandwiches. The sandwiches would go bad unless you sold them right away. So there's no procrastination. I knew that if I push myself past the fear of going and talking to someone new and trying to sell them a sandwich, if I push past that fear, I would get an easy $5. Well, likely I would get $5. And if I did it three times, for sure I'd get at least $5, maybe $15. That's what I was selling the sandwiches for. And so it's so hard when you know what $15 can get you to not say, go do it right now. There's no procrastination. You gotta, It's not going to happen tomorrow. I have to go do it right now. And that was really powerful. What's one thing that you took away from that?
I mean, I had a very similar experience. Like I'm sitting at this door, knocking on this stranger's door. We have no idea who we are. I'm trying to sell a $5,000 paint job that I've never painted in my life. So to persevere through all that rejection, that was a big takeaway of mine. And you really don't have to have the experience to do something. It's they have to trust that you can follow through with what you say. So really, for me, the big learning lessons are just how to connect with people. That you don't know and really how to sell yourself through a lot of failure.
What about this, Jordan? I always thought that if I could push myself through all that failure, then talking to girls would be super easy, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
Like all the stuff that was working for me for business, that was like walking, not for business, for door-to-door sales should have helped me. It didn't. I was still intimidated. Really? I still thought, well, if I fail, then everyone knows that I'm a loser here for failing, or I don't know what to say. Did you, you're smiling at that. You didn't experience any of that.
I didn't really experience that. No, I mean, I think I focused a lot on the body language, and I took every opportunity as a chance to kind of learn how to communicate.
So you were confident enough to try to talk to girls and ask them out and be okay if they said no?
Yeah, I think I just kind of was brought up in kind of like a culture where it was okay to talk to girls. And
what was the culture?
I
grew up in New York. It was okay to talk to everyone.
I mean, like my dad was a total jock growing up, 3-sport athlete in college. So very social guy. So I just kind of had that influence growing up and was always really confident talking to girls. And I have a little sister, and then I always was hanging out with my mom. So I was around women my entire life. So
I was too. It didn't help me. But maybe if my dad was more of a jock, my dad's so unjock like. We've never thrown a football, baseball, or anything. He's so unjock like. Last night I was on my exercise bike, just working out. I was going for about 2 hours. My dad said, "You know, they say that if you work out at night, you're not going to be able to fall asleep. Aren't you worried about that?" I said, "I think I'm okay. 2 hours is going to knock me out pretty good." But the interesting thing that I filed away in my head is this guy's looking at me exercise and he's looking for the problem with it. Like, where's the danger in exercising? Yeah. Right. I definitely didn't come from a jock background. Maybe if I did, I'd be able to, first of all, throw football a little bit better. And number two, go and approach women and not think like my world was going to collapse if they weren't into me. All right. So I see the painting job. Let's go into this travel agency because, frankly, that one didn't work out, but you did get a lot out of it. What was the goal with the travel agency, and what was it, and why didn't it work out?
Yeah, so just kind of like the sandwich experience, like painting houses, but it's not sexy. Like, that's not something I can go to a party and be like, "Hey, girl, what's up? Yeah, I run a painting business." Really sexy, right? So travel was a lot more sexy, and I wanted to do a high-end concierge service, something where I could be connected with, you know, limo companies and clubs and restaurants and just kind of be a baller, essentially, at that age. And so what I tried to do is take the model that CollegeWorks had of hiring interns and providing this really this structured internship for people and translating it to this travel industry. And so what I did is I took the whole model, replicated the whole training process, the values, really the whole structure. So I built like a brand. I spent a ton of money in legality. So I built this company without sales. So I figured, okay, I could go door to door and sell paint jobs. I can go door without any experience. I can go door to door and sell travel trips without any experience. And that was not the case. There's just so many more logistics and so much more liability. It's not like a local thing. It's where there's X material and Y and blah, blah, blah. There's no, you're traveling across country, sometimes across the world, and you don't know the people you're traveling with. And so there's just so many variables. It was way harder to build that trust that you could follow through.
I see. I guess if you come in and paint my office, and I was just told this green is all horrible for a backdrop, but if you were to come in and paint it and get it wrong, some other guy can come in and fix it. But if you send me on a week-long vacation with somebody and I hate it, then it's we're both upset, and the person who I'm with is upset at me for picking you. I see. And so that's why it failed.
Yeah.
You know what? And that's part of the problem with being a good salesperson. You feel like you could persuade anybody, and you stop. I stopped anyway for a while in my life saying, what is it that they really want? And I started to think, I could sell it. What do I want them to have? When it failed, how much money did you put into it?
I was about 17 grand at that point.
Okay. And painful, right? I can see in your face you're a little embarrassed by that still.
I was like a college student too, so that was the world, you know?
Yeah, and I kind of feel like the whole travel agency business died as soon as Expedia, Priceline, and the others came around. But I could see how you said, you know what? We're going to be the concierge version of that. Some people want something higher end. All right. Was there a definitive end, or did it kind of unwind?
Yeah, so I'm a big proponent of mentorship. So I had this mentor who was kind of high up in Accenture, and I got on the call with him at some point when I was toward the tail end of this thing. And I started walking him through all the cool stuff I had done, thinking he'd be so proud. And then he just started asking me some just basic business questions, like, okay, how many sales do you have? What do they think most valuable about your service? And just all these kind of basic questions you ask before you start a business.
Yeah,
have the answers to any of them. And so then I went and did a quick questionnaire to just some of the people I've been talking to, some of the leads, and it was clear that I just didn't have the I did not have the ability or the resources to follow through with what they were looking for at that time. So it's it was just kind of like a timing thing. I wasn't willing to invest the amount of time I think it would take to get to where it needed to be. So at that point, it was not the time for me. I put it away.
So you definitively said, it's not the time for me. I'm closing it down. And the reason I'm asking is because that takes some guts, and it takes you figuring out that that you failed and coming to terms with that. And did you have to do that?
Yeah, I did. And it's not something I like to do. I like to win. You know, that's the environment that I grew up
from,
in.
A jock mentality, right?
Yeah, very competitive. I don't lose, you know. And but yeah, it was very humbling. But I took it as a positive because I went through the whole process of building a company. Like, I did the LLC on my own. I went through the whole legality and structuring all that with insurance and errors and emissions and all these things. So now that when I take it to my next venture, I have that foundation built. So it was almost like an investment to an education, even though it didn't create the return that I was hoping for.
All right. Well, you figured something out. You then moved on to another business, which we'll talk about in a moment. But first, I've got to tell you about golf balls for a second. So I heard about this. Well, you're going to dig this. There's a company that sells lost golf balls. Now, I'm not a golfer, but apparently these guys hit the golf balls one time, they get it lost, and, you know, it's basically good golf balls, but they go to waste. So there's a company that does golf ball, that finds these lost golf balls, cleans them up, and resells them. And the reason that I paid any attention to it at all is because they did this contest where they were offering all kinds of prizes, golf balls, essentially, right? And as a result of doing this contest, they ended up with, let me get the numbers of, where are the numbers over here? They ended up with, where are the numbers? I had it right here in front of me. There it is. 15,675 unique entries, meaning over 15,000 email addresses in their database, because people enter, you know, put your email address to enter the contest. And then the thing with the contest that they did is that it also has a viral component. So when you enter the contest, you're encouraged, you're incentivized to tell your friends to enter the contest and get them to do it, right? All this, we've seen this a million times, which means to me that maybe I thought it was played out, but it's not. These guys got 15,000+ people subscribe and to go through this contest. But the thing that really caught my attention is they also sold $50,000 in product to that list. So they did this contest giving out golf balls. They ended up getting over 15,000 email addresses. And to those people, they sold over $50,000 worth of golf balls, recycled golf balls. I said, maybe this whole contest, the viral contest thing, is not played out. Maybe there's something to it. And the company that these guys partnered up with is Viral Sweep, which is now a sponsor of Mixergy. We're working with them. But not only that, they created a contest for me here at Mixergy because, hell, I'd like to see how many email addresses I get, and I'd like to see if we can sell to that too. And so I thought my audience would like to do this, not so much because they want to win, and I'll tell you what they're going to win if they enter the contest, but to get a sense of what this is like. What is it like to run one of these contests? And if you enter, I'll share whatever numbers I have with you. So here's the thing. If you want to enter my contest, and I'm going to give the winner a stand-up desk. I've moved to a stand-up desk. Jordan, you're in a sit-down desk, aren't you?
I'm mobile. That's what I do. So I'm everywhere. I'm standing up. I'm sitting down. I'm in the car, in the lift, everywhere.
I like having a home base with everything exactly where I want it to be. And for a long time I was sitting down and it was starting to get a little bit tough, especially on long hour long phone calls. I'd stand up behind my desk. I'd kind of peer at the camera a little bit. I'd move around the camera. Finally said, you know, let's get a stand up desk. Huge, huge change. So we're going to give that to the winner. I've switched over from earbuds to these AirPods. Whew, so good. This is the best Apple product I've had in years. I love it. So we're going to give that. We're going to basically give Andrew's ideal office situation to the winner, right? And you're going to go see everything that I like to have in my office. So if you want to enter this contest, it's at mixergy.com/win. It's run for us by a company called Viral Sweep. And the reason we're using Viral Sweep is because I don't have time to go figure out how to get the legal the legal issues handled for a contest. You ever run a contest, you get one of those software apps for Jordan, and then they tell you, but go talk to your lawyer about how to get the whatever the legal link that you have
terms
to have.
Terms and conditions.
The terms and conditions, stuff. All that. Yeah. I have to go run a freaking lawyer through this before I do the contest? No.
Yeah.
I like that these guys do it. I like that they pick the random person for me. I like that they make sure that my people who are super smart aren't going to cheat just to see what they could get away with. I like that they track the entries. I like the whole thing. These guys just take care of it all for me, which is why I'm working with them at Viral Sweep. Viral Sweep is running the contest. I hope to sell through this. I hope to generate more email addresses, and I will share those numbers with everyone who enters the contest. So if you want to try this contest, go to this URL. It's Mixergy.com/win. Mixergy.com/win. If it works for this golf ball company, it's got to work for Mixergy, and it's got to work for the person who's listening to me. So go try my contest, and then if you want one of your own, check it out. We've got information leading you to Viral Sweep right on my contest page. Again, that URL, Mixergy.com/win.
Do you know what the time frame was for that golf ball example? Because I think that's really interesting.
You know what? They actually ran multiple contests. The first one was February 3rd to March 9th. They got 12,286 entries for that one. Then they just kept doing it. And each there isn't a single contest that they did that got more entries than the very first one. First one got 12,286 entries. They did other contests that got anywhere from roughly 2,000 to roughly 5,500 entries.
Interesting.
And that's over the course of, let me see, about half a year.
Not bad.
Interesting. Why do you need to know the dates? I feel like you've identified something that I didn't think of and I should be aware of.
Yeah, I was just curious if it was something that was really fast, because if you're going to, like, for example, if someone doesn't just have the money sitting around to maybe hire somebody, if they want to take out a loan and they really believe in something, if they can recoup that capital or that cash flow to cover those payments, it's something
worth
it. What
do you mean? Like, what's the expense in this?
Yeah, so I guess I don't necessarily know their model and how they charge, but I'm also just considering, you know, if it's something where you think you can generate some cash flow from it. And rather than just putting forth my money, if I could use the bank's money or a lender's money and then make small payments to there, but then
what would you do with the money?
Payments. The money that I would get, because I don't know what the service cost.
Oh, it's nothing. So you don't need a bank loan for it. For Viral Sweep? Nah, it's peanuts.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. We're talking about like basic software. I mean, it's do it for you, but it's not the kind of cost that you would need to go.
Oh, so it's not a service. It's like a software.
It's software and a service, and it's both fairly inexpensive. We're not going to have to go to the bank to get a loan to work with them. I like the way you're thinking about it, but no, it's definitely a do it for you type of operation, but it's, they spent a lot of time with us trying to think through what the contest is. I think your biggest expense is going to be, what do you give away? And so like a desk is going to be expensive. The AirPods are a pain in the ass to get, right? It took me 6 freaking weeks, but it was worth every second of waiting. right. So it's whatever you give away. These guys with the golf, the recycled golf balls, they have to give away golf balls. And it definitely cost them money here. It cost them $6,269.58 worth of golf balls, right? But it's over a few months, and they generated enough email addresses to make it worth its while.
Cool.
I like how into it you are. That means that even though I bumbled the frickin' ad read, and I like to think of myself now as a way better pitch man, that it still went over well.
Yeah, good. I'm curious. I'm always curious about everything.
Yeah. All right. If you guys want to check it out, it'll be on Mixergy.com/win, W-I-N. And Jordan, it's not up right now while we're recording. It will be up when this episode goes up. We want to get the contest started right when this episode is published. Cool. All right. I see the first business sucked for you. It didn't work out well. I was going to say sucked, but I don't know. All right. You then get into something new, this generation marketing. What do you think of that?
Yeah. So a buddy of mine that was in a couple of my business classes, he knew that I was doing things with that painting company. I was successful with that. And then I was doing this travel thing. And so I just wanted to stay connected. And he himself was doing a mobile app venture. So he had worked on this app for a couple of years. He had a couple of developers, and he pulled me aside and said, "Hey, you know, I think that if we put our heads together, we'll be able to create some successful business or whatever. You know, we were just out of college. So yeah, sure. I'm kind of ramping down this travel thing. Let's see what we got." So he came over to my house And I had this plumber working on my sink, and we were trying to brainstorm like what could be an idea that we could easily fulfill, like go out today and start executing on. And we just had this idea, well, our generation, you know, we're great at social media, where, you know, a small business like this plumber, maybe not so much. So we started asking him questions, kind of surveying him why he's working on my sink.
Okay.
And he's like, you know, I want to invest in social media. I want to invest in a better responsive website. I just don't even know who I talk to. I don't know. Is it, you know, is it someone like your age that would help me? And it's like, oh, you know, we could totally help you with that. And so this birthed this generation marketing. And then we started going door to door, knocking on small mom and pop shops. So kind of taking my experience of doing it with the paint company, because that's something I was just very confident in, and selling social media management and small responsive sites to these little restaurants and like boutiques and things around town. And we wanted to scale that though, because I didn't want to be knocking on doors for the rest of my life. And so this idea that I had was going to Chamber of Commerce, because they do all the work of connecting all of these SMBs, and then they offer these yearly packages with all these services. And when doing some research, we found that not a lot of these commerces have, or chambers, excuse me, have digital service offerings. So we're willing to, if they sold them to all of their, you know, hundreds of companies that were in their package, that we give them a discount. Okay. And so I was then going to all of these chambers, pitching to the boards, and they were all excited about it. And then we wanted to kind of rebrand specifically to the chambers. So we bought the domain chamberds.com. Chamber Digital Services.
I get it.
So that was kind of that venture.
And they were actually helpful for you. They actually got you customers.
So we were getting through that process. So while I was getting through that, and it was long because there's a whole board, they have monthly meetings, and it's just not a quick turn thing. While we were doing that, we were also getting inquiries for mobile apps. And so because my business partner was working on that venture, he had a couple of developers that were working on his app. He just brought an idea to me and said, hey, what if we actually develop this app? I have the developers. We have the opportunity. I'm like, sure, let's try it. And so while I'm doing this Chamber of Commerce deal over here, we're actually developing our first mobile app on the side. And that turns out to be very profitable. And so while we're kind of waiting for things to turn up over here on the mobile app side, we're also now starting to make strategic partnerships, and we got just now deals flowing in, and this is just blowing up. So it's just kind of like, whatever over here. And then we just had the domain. We didn't want to invest in the whole business side like I did with Expert Travel again. So we just kept Chamber DS and we just made it a little tweak to Chamber Development Services, chamber like a gun chamber where development only takes one shot.
Got it.
And then we just kind of ran with that. And then just sales just kept coming in, and did around 700K in that first year. And so we're just trying to keep up with the business that happened over here.
Wait, before we started, you said 600K the first year.
Yeah. So it was over. So 600K was the goal that we were trying to achieve.
But
so we
did seven over, in sales, roughly.
We did between six and seven. It was almost seven. So our goal was 600K.
Let me understand how you got so many sales in the first year. Yeah. Where did you get your very first customer, the one that was brought to you?
So the very, very first customer was from my business partner. He was going to Epicodis at the time. It's a code school here in Portland, Oregon. Mm-hmm. And part of going through that program, they offer this kind of side gig where if you go out and you find anyone that has a mobile app idea and you bring it to the school, you get like 2 or 5% commission.
And then what does the school do with it? They get paid to build the app for them?
I think they get paid a very, very low rate. And it's more of just education for all the students there. They get to work on an app, like a legitimate app for a business. And so in bringing this in, he's like, you know what? I have a couple opportunities that I'm bringing to this Epicodis, but if we were to just do it ourselves, what's kind of that commission structure? Like, what's our profitability on a job like this? So we ran the numbers, and obviously it was way more profitable if we'd managed it, because we just cut out all the overhead, the middleman, and all that.
2 to 5% or just a handful of percentage points is just not enough.
Yeah.
Wow. And so like, he was going door to door just saying, hey, do you need an app?
More like cold calling.
Who was he cold calling?
You know, I never really dug into this, but our first client was this eye physician, a local eye physician. Mm-hmm. And it cost us $2,500 to make as a $5,500 project. And this eye physician just almost needed this PDF. It's this app that just housed PDFs for the patients in the waiting room that just wanted to educate themselves on.
I see. You know what? When I heard about this, I said, what kind of eye doctor needs to have his own app? What does he want people to schedule with him with an app? Why didn't he just use a web page yeah. or something else? I see. No, it's in the office. He doesn't want to be one of these jerks who forces you to use a billionth copy of a billionth copy of some piece of paper form that once made sense. He wants to give his patients an iPad, have them fill it out like human beings, and then hand it over. I see. And you guys created that for him. And $5,500 is what you charge. He was willing to pay $5,500 just to stop jerking around his patients with paper.
Well, there's that, and he saved paper. The money on printing paper, on paying his employees.
Really? The iPad would be about $500 plus $55 for you, $6,000 just to avoid paying paper. That doesn't seem like a fair trade-off.
It's a one-time deal, right? And so all the paper he'd have to pay for, and if you have all the clients that are running through there on a weekly basis and then paying all of his employees on a weekly basis to generate this, the time that goes into doing that,
all right.
as well as the – yeah, so –
you know what? Now you're making sense. Okay. I feel like 55 is still a lot. It's low for an app, but it's still a lot to solve this problem. But I get it. And you guys built it for him. It cost you $2,500 to build it. Who created the app?
Yeah, so it was one of the developers that was working on my business partner's app. It's an iOS app, so I was working on his app, and so we just brought him over to work on this app.
Okay.
And then he ended up just sticking with us as we continued to develop more apps.
Okay.
So all it's right. just someone that he had in his network that I think he actually got from just one of those online companies, he's just a developer that he hired from online, like an Upwork.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like this would have been a great software for you guys to create for all doctors, just one app that any doctor can use and pay you monthly for it or pay you one time for it. Mm-hmm. But that's not the direction you guys wanted to go in. You didn't want to create your own product at this stage. You just said, we want to find more guys like this doctor. All right. So see how you got your first customer. I see who built it for you. What about the next batch of customers? Did they come from cold calls like you mentioned before, or was it something else?
Yeah, it came from strategic partnerships, but I think what you just brought up was really interesting and why we went the route of the service company that developed the product as opposed to just, you know, trying to IP some of this product. And I think that we saw the opportunity to learn how to create successful products while also getting paid to learn, while also learning how to do a service business. So essentially, we were learning how to run a product company and a service company in the same time, which is why we pursued this route. Being young, we were just trying to learn. Eventually wanted to do that, and I can get to that later in the story, but we ended up taking equity in products and so forth.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Who owns equity now that you sold the business?
So I personally own equity in those. We can talk about what the merger was like. They didn't buy out the business. It was more of they licensed rights to – yes, essentially.
How are you going to explain it? It was more like a what?
It was more like licensing some of the assets. So like an asset buy.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. One other thing that you did to get, actually, wait, let's talk about the cold calls. What else did you do to get early customers?
Okay. So, what we did is we created strategic partnerships with local shops in town. Cause when doing some research into just the market, just the landscape, we found that there was just this big gap. There is a couple small development shops, you know, two to three developers that were almost just like devs for hire. And then it were just, you know, freelancers from online. And then you have companies like the Emerge Interactive here in town or the Field out of New York. And you have these big agencies that build apps of 200K and above. But then there's this kind of middle ground of the 20 to 100K range where there wasn't really a shop or agency that could provide the strategy consulting, the business strategy, and the ongoing support, and kind of some of the higher level advisory services on top of just designing and developing. Because typically that would take more acumen and more people, thus more overhead, and that's why they'd kind of price themselves out. I think we just kind of had a unique skill set that allowed us to play in that middle ground. So knowing that we could provide that service, at that middle ground where these top tier shops were turning these opportunities away, we then just sought to connect with these shops that were turning projects away that were 100K or less, offer them a finder's fee for referring projects to us and making a warm introduction. And that's how we just got all of our leads.
How hard is it to get those kind of partnerships?
I mean, it's not just, hey, we can take your leads from you, right? For us, we put together an entire process for that, an entire system even. So we put together pitch decks, we put together examples. So it's like trying to win a client, but we're doing that specifically tailored to each agency. So there was totally a vetting process by someone making a warm introduction. They're essentially putting their reputation on the line. So that's, you know, we had to take that into consideration, making sure that we had all of our testimonials wrapped up, a bunch of references. We gave access to our code bases so they can see that we're actually producing quality code so that they know when making the introduction, they're in good hands. You know, giving examples and things for them to click through so that when they are making an introduction and saying, this is a reputable company we suggest talking to, that they actually believe that, you know, that they had confidence in us to do that.
Give me an example of a typical customer that you got through these kinds of relationships.
Yeah. So I'll use GrowBaby. That was one of our first milestone wins, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. They were a nutrition company, like a family-owned nutrition company. Emily was the person that we connected with, and her mom started the company. And so it was really just like a family-owned kind of smaller business, someone that doesn't have more than 20-50K to spend on a mobile app project. Her project was 21K, the Grow Baby Nutrition Tracker for moms, for pregnant moms. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so those are kind of the typical clients that we got referred to initially. And then once we started to really prove that we could handle higher scale things, it became more about we were building our reputation online, and we started getting signups through our website. And so we almost had that kind of organic snowball just from our traction. It just started with those strategic partnerships, and then that created the cash flow. Then we could then invest into our own marketing engine, and that's where the whole thing picked up.
I'm looking at GrowBaby right now. The app as they have it now, is that what you guys built for them?
So now I don't believe there's one in the store because her company ended up getting this massive grant from the whole state of Florida. And I think Florida is mandating the use of her program. And so they're going through multiple million dollar rounds of doing these research studies to really back what they do. And so right now it's not a focus of theirs. So I don't even believe it's in the store anymore. But we built their entire app platform, and that's what you're looking at probably.
The reason I say that is because it doesn't feel like the middle has enough potential customers in it. I understand on the low end, people who don't have much money to invest in a website, for example, or maybe just enough to invest in a website, there are a ton of those. People who have companies that need a really polished major app, there's a lot of revenue there and a good market there. But that middle ground seems really rough, right? There aren't that many people like GrowMom used to be where they had just a few thousand dollars for an app. Is that true?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't believe so. Because it really doesn't, I mean, if you get traction and you validate your concept, then it should be sustainable to get to the next level and to justify more investment, whether it's from its own sales or whether it's from your business being able to budget something because it's generating the revenue. And so I think it just comes down to being able to connect a benefit to the app. I mean, it's got to produce at any level. And so I think it's just starting out at a level that makes sense for you.
I guess I just don't see that middle ground of apps doing well. If you look at the app store, independent app makers just don't do well anymore.
Right. Well, independent app makers, I agree, because there's more that goes into building a successful app than developing it. And it takes a lot more acumen to do so. There's several steps that go into making an app. And a lot of times someone is just good at one of them. So it takes really a team of people to do that, or someone that has a very well-rounded experience in building a lot of successful apps.
All right. And tell me again, what kind of agencies introduced you to these clients?
So Knuckleheads was one here in town. Forex Solutions was another one, and Emerge Interactive.
What did these businesses do? They were building websites for clients, and so they were able to transfer some of those clients to you?
So they just had their own marketing engine. So they were getting hit up on their website just through Google search. And then they would just typical biz dev, jump on the phone, qualify them. If they're not a good fit, they'd make an introduction. They'd make an introduction to us because we were a reputable partner.
I see. If they were too small for Emerge, Emerge would say, hey, you know what? We actually are going to charge more than your budget, but I have a company that I could recommend. They feel good about you because you show them your code, et cetera. And you also give them a little bit of a commission for making the introduction. Is that right?
Right.
Okay. All right. How did you get the developers to build this out?
So we just recruited them. You know, we looked on LinkedIn to find anyone that was in our area that we could sit down with. Good people know good people. So we just, you know, put our feelers out in the development community just to get introductions to people. I looked at various online resources. Like I mentioned, Upwork, I think Odesk was one of them. That was more of my business partner's realm, responsible for his CTO, COO, looking for more of the production side of it. And just made sure that we always had just a pipeline of talent. And it really didn't take more than a couple of developers per project at a time. So we, you know, it was really easy to scale up. And once we had the projects coming in, we had the money, it was easier to find people to work on projects. So.
Cool. All right. Let me talk about TopTal, actually, and this feeds into it. Do you know much about TopTal?
I don't, actually. Cool.
So there are agencies just like yours right now listening to me, and they probably are doing what you are, which is kind of hustling for each new customer to find – they're hustling to get the right developers, the right designers for those projects. Well, those companies should know that many of their competitors are using TopTal as their secret fulfillment center, secret weapon. What they do is, like you, they get a client, and instead of going to those cheapo sites like Upwork and so on, what they do is they go to TopTal and say, look, I've got a client. He needs a mobile app. It's going to be iOS. We also need an Android component. Here's how our project is going to work. Here's the kind of people that we need. We'd like two different people, and we need them to work on this project within this period of time. TopTal goes into their network of top developers. I mean, the kinds of people who won't just do exactly what you tell them, but will actually think through the problem and come up with a better solution often than you could. CTO level, Google employee level people. TopTal goes into their network, brings those out, and they say, okay, look, Jordan, your company needs these two people. Here they are. You get to talk to them, make sure that they really are the right fit for you. And if they are, those two people work for your clients as if they work for your agency. Your clients do not even have to know that the two people you hired from TopTal are actually from TopTal. They, as far as they know, you've got all the resources that you need in order to build it out. You've got the best developers for them. So that's one of the things that I had no idea was going on with TopTal until I had drinks with one of the people there, with a matcher. Matcher is someone who, if you work with TopTal, is the first person you're going to talk to. You tell him what you're looking for. He goes into the database and he'll match you with the right person. And he said, hey, we actually have a lot of these agencies who work with us, and we are their team. We are their staff. It's basically two people with a phone, and we do the development. So if you're out there and you're running an agency and you want to hire the best of the best, or frankly, if you're just running one project and you need the best of the best, you owe it to yourself to go check out TopTal, and that's TopTal. And frankly, if you're a Mixergy listener, they're going to give you 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours, and that's in addition to a no-risk trial period of up to 2 weeks. So many people who have listened to me have at least written them down, and many have actually signed up and worked with TopTal, and I urge you guys to check them out. Go check out top as in top of the mountain, tal as in talent.com/Mixergy, toptal.com/Mixergy. All right. I see where you're getting your customers. When you get to roughly 700,000 in sales, how much of that do you guys get to keep?
We were operating about 40 to 50% profitability per project. But when you have, we were investing into growing. So we were increasing our overhead. And when there were times that we weren't selling, you know, where I was more involved with the growing and recruiting and training and those aspects of the business, because I was essentially just the salesperson, that grew to that point. That's where we needed to have that runway to do that. So I would say we were operating net around 15 to 20%. Andrew, I think I lost you. I can't hear you.
Oh, sorry. 15 to 20% ended up coming in after your salaries?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So roughly $140,000 in the bank after salary. That's ideal, actually. Let's say even less than that. At 15%, you're roughly $100,000 in profit after after your salaries. That's not bad. For first year business? Okay. And then second year, how did you do?
Second year, we were more profitable. So that's where I actually ended up buying my business partner out at the end of that first year. Just there's things that I wanted to do the business. We weren't seeing eye to eye. And that's where I ended up doing that. And that's shortly after that, that's where I started to collaborate with Emerge, with doing stuff with them.
Before you start to basically shift your business to Emerge, there was a period there where you only had $1,500 in the bank.
Yeah.
What happened? You're smiling at that too. What happened there?
I mean, for me, just challenges are funny. Like they just happen. It's life. And then it's how you come back from it. So what had happened was our model, we take 50% up front and then 50% upon completion. But me being the sales guy, I'm loving upsells. You know, as we dig into a project, because we had very tiered approach to developing these projects, we start to identify other opportunities for them. So as we start to match things to their business and some opportunities that we saw with just their business growth on those side of things, then we started adding on little features and tweaks here and there. And so we'd take the 50% down and then we'd move the other 50% to the end of the project. So what had happened was, even though we got 50% here, as we continued to add things, it kept pushing that bigger payment further and further and further and further away. And so the overhead was consistent, right? So we kept
paying. You still have to pay your developer every week, even though you're going to get the rest of the money after the project's done. And you're saying if you added an extra, let's say, $10,000 to the cost of the project, you wouldn't take $5,000 now when you agree to add to the project and then $5,000 at the end. That extra $10,000 that was work to be that you discovered while you were working on the project, you'd get paid the whole amount of it after the project was done.
We got paid the 50% up front.
Okay.
So we are still doing that, but we are still pushing back a 50% toward the end. And I see. It allowed us, so it wasn't like this, but it was kind of just like this. And we eventually got to the point where, okay, it's getting really low. So to solve that problem, what I had to do was jump on the phone with a lot of our clients and create these milestone payments. So we sent them the kind of the prototype we were at. So like the 75% mark, we jump on the phone, tell them, hey, here's where we're at with the project. We want to do some walkthroughs with you, show you where we're at, give you code up to date, blah, 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 essentially to negotiate getting half of that payment up front.
I see.
So that's really what saved our butts.
Okay. All right. And then why did you decide to what do you call it? You don't even say sale. Why did you decide to move your stuff into Emerge?
So a lot of it, in growing really fast, a lot of my time and focus was on recruiting people, training people, legality, process. It was just being inundated with just management, with just company management. And I wanted to more focus on just the personal growth aspect. So thought leadership. And so I had a podcast at the time, the App Academy, and that was a huge driver in our growth. And there was just a lot of things that I wanted to do to grow, to be a better leader. And I just found that as fast as I wanted to do it, I just wasn't allowing myself enough time to do it. And so really making this transition was an investment into leveling up as an individual quicker so that I could get to where I want to go quicker at a bigger scale. And so
wanted to grow your podcast more than you wanted to grow your business?
The podcast was a piece of it. I wanted to grow my knowledge base quicker. And I was focusing more in the day-to-day, more of my energy in the day-to-day than actually learning and growing beyond that.
But don't you learn and grow so that you can grow your business? Wouldn't it have made more sense to just build your business up, bring in people to help you out, and take more time to build your knowledge at that point?
Yeah, that's definitely one way to do it. I saw that I could leverage the Emerge Interactive platform. They'd been around for 18 years, servicing massive companies. So rather than trying to work up to that point, I would quickly jump into a portfolio and with a massive team that had all of that, so that I could.
I'll be honest with you. Something doesn't feel like I'm getting the full story here. And that's what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah.
If the business is doing really well, why not sell it at a strong exit? If the business isn't doing well, but is profitable, why not grow it? It seems like maybe you were kind of flat and weren't bringing in that much money, but you had enough for a salary. You had enough for a profit. What am I missing?
Yeah. Here?
Be open.
Yeah. Yeah, no problem. And like I mentioned earlier too, I ended up buying out my business partner because we weren't seeing eye to eye. So I was also stuck in a relationship. I felt like I was stuck in a relationship, and it wasn't something that was conducive to just the lifestyle that I was trying to have. And it wasn't really, I didn't feel fulfilled. And so it wasn't really the fun thing that I thought I was working for and looking forward to.
Did it feel like a job?
Yeah,
because you're basically booking deals on one end and selling them to someone else. There is that what it was?
It was just kind of like the culmination of just the whole thing. You know, it's I wanted more and I felt restricted to do more, and I felt like I was owing to somebody else, and I felt like I was doing most of the work because I had all the business background, and he brought kind of the mobile app specific acumen, but we reached a scale to where that didn't really do much anymore. It took a lot more to run a business at that scale. There was a lot more just focuses of the business, and I had really all the experience to do all that. So I felt like I was lifting, you know, 90% of the business and being rewarded for 50% of it. And there really wasn't openness and willingness to make things fair. And I just reached a roadblock, and there was really no give on that. So it was one of those things where I just wanted to get out of it.
Okay. And what you were starting to say earlier, what the deal was, what was the deal?
What do you mean the deal?
What was the deal for the exit? What did they pay?
Yeah. So, there was no money in that.
No money.
Yeah.
So they get the company, and then what?
So they didn't get the company. They get access to all the assets, so they could use all of the portfolio and everything that I'd done. And then I essentially get to get full carte blanche to the resources and the platform to use for my personal ventures.
So if you now needed to create an app, they would do it for free. No, they wouldn't. You still have to pay for the developers.
Right. So there's a lot more flexibility in the pricing because it's something that.
So you gave up this business that was doing well just to get a discount on your development work in the future for projects that you haven't even launched?
It's not about the development. It's not about building the product. It's about the IP. It's about being able to leverage the portfolio and the resources and the knowledge there.
Like what?
So I kind of compare Emerge Interactive to just like the Justice League, right? So you have all these superhumans that are just amazing at what they do. So anytime I can go talk to an art director that is just leaps and bounds ahead of anyone that I've ever talked to, a user-centered designer that is top-notch, you know? And so we develop platforms for the biggest companies in the world. We are the best at what we do. And so I get to just tap into those resources whenever I want.
Have conversations with them.
Yes, have conversations with them.
And what else?
Yeah, as well as being able to work on their projects in a lead role to where I can have control over what, you know, where things go with mobile projects. So right there, that's just.
So you help guide the company in their work. They give you input into your projects. And that's what you sold the business for? It was a profitable business?
Yeah.
Profitable business. You sold it for access to the people at the company who you can go and get insight from and help with whatever you're thinking, but not actual work, just help. And you also get to guide where Emerge goes as a business? What am I missing here?
I sold it for knowledge. I did.
You sold it for knowledge?
Yeah, because I'm confident I can start business. That's one thing that I know I can do. So for me, you know, if you understand how to identify the problem and to solve it, you can make money. And so for me, I think I have all these business ventures that I'm working on the side, and they're more of the long tail game. But for me, I needed a quicker route to knowledge and experience. And that's not something that I saw happening very quickly with ChamberDS, especially with the partnership that I had. So it was more feeling claustrophobic and wanting to get to the experience and the knowledge quicker. And that's where I saw an opportunity, because in acquiring the business 100% from my business partner, it was such a long drawn out process where I wasn't really focusing on sales. And so the company itself was falling stagnant because I wasn't investing into something that I knew I would have to valuate and pay for.
Okay.
You know, his shares. And so it was at a time to where if I was going to make any sort of move, that was the perfect time to make the move.
All right, let me get a sense of how you think. Let me tell you about an issue I'm working on, and
okay,
maybe you can help guide me. You're the mentor guy. I didn't even get into like how you've had great mentors your whole life. So I'm really into chatbots as a way of growing people's marketing. I've been mm-hmm. teaching it, and now I've got students who can build chatbots. I want to help them get more clients. I've been listening to how you said that you worked with different agencies and got referrals from them. What do you think? Where would I get, if I wanted to get more clients for my graduates of the Bot Academy? It's interesting how we both have the word academy in our titles. What's a good way for me to get that?
So where I've gotten a lot of my success is just from creating relationships. So I've used strategic partnerships and mentorships. So for me personally, with my skill set and my success and history of doing that, that's where I would go because partner. That's my superpower.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think of what's a good partner for that. And the only people I think of are anyone who's like a consultant selling marketing automation help, right? But they should really be doing this work themselves. They should learn how to build bots. It's not that hard, and doing it themselves.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tricky one. And I'm not too experienced into, you know, your niche specifically mm-hmm. to advise. But I would say that, you know, online, I mean, you're the best at that. You're going to be way better equipped to answer this question than I am. But, you know,
so far, partnering my best on, like, answer webinars is anyone who's seen me talk about it and decided that they didn't want to learn from me but still wants a bot. And that's a big number of people who say, I get it. I don't want to do it. They're a really good referral to our graduates, and that's where our best ones yeah. come from. People who say, Andrew, stop telling me how to do it. I'm never going to do it. My team's not going to do it. I want to pay you guys do it. You guys do it for me.
So I'd say, you know, what makes any entrepreneur successful is the list that they have, the audience, and what they've captured. And so, I would say, you know, with my relationships and my partnerships, I look at the audience that they've gathered and the marketing engines that they've built, and how can I incentivize them to let me tap into that? So that's where, you know, maybe with the bots, there's webinars you can co-host where then you can leverage their network, and then figuring out what's the best way for you to be valuable to them.
Yeah, that I've been doing. What I'm really interested in is the partnerships that you've done, because I do see the value in something like that. I'm going to have to think about who would be a good partner, and maybe someone in the audience will have some feedback and ideas for me. It's andrew@mixergy.com. andrew@mixergy.com. If you guys want to reach out, let me know what you're thinking about that. All right. You know what, Jordan? I feel like there's something I'm missing here. It was
okay.
The numbers are solid. 700,000 about first year. Second year, how much?
Second year, we're about 400.
400, but more profit.
Yeah.
More profit per dollar in revenue, or more profit overall?
More profit in dollar per revenue.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now you sold the business, or you gave it away for knowledge. What? I teach it for free right here, Mixergy Podcast. What are you doing now with yourself?
Yeah. So now I run a podcast, Mobile First. So that's powered by Emerge Interactive.
I see it, actually. So that's the other thing that was confusing. Mm-hmm. I went to Mobile First. The website is emergemobilefirst.com. So are you an employee of Emerge?
Yes, right now I am.
And so one of the responsibilities that you have is you create their podcast. I see. All right, I get it. And because you've been in this space, you have enough knowledge to guide the questions right and to find the right people. Like, I know Rand Fishkin isn't going on just about anyone's podcast, right? But you got him on a podcast recently. And so because you've got experience here and credibility here, you get better podcast guests, you have better conversations with them. And as a result, you help bring in new clients to Emerge. Do you feel like maybe you never had the employee experience, and now by working for a big company, that's one of the big things that you get to see? What's it like? How do they run their meetings? How do they staff up? How does the leader get to take some time away? Is that what it is?
You nailed it.
Right? Yeah, I feel like I missed that in my life. I did it a little bit in college, but not enough.
And it wasn't even necessarily the employee experience. It's seeing how something to this scale operates so that I know how to operate at this scale. It's been a really fascinating learning experience, and just how things are structured and just how someone can get to this point really and just figuring it out. Because, you know, me having the relationship with the owner, being a mentor and friend of mine before coming on to work with them, you know, that's I get kind of a unique insight into his personal life as well as the business persona that he has, you know.
Yeah, I see the value in that. I would like to see and experience how a company is run from the inside, including some of the broken parts of it. Andy Ratcliffe, I think, yeah, it was Andy Ratcliffe who told me the best companies are often mismanaged. I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, think about some of the best successes out there. Their management wasn't great, especially not at first, but the product and everything else made so much sense that they were able to keep growing." And I think sometimes it's helpful to see that from the inside, to realize, hey, all these people who seem like they've got it all together actually don't have it all together. I'm not that far off. Even that is useful. But I want even the details. Like, I've got someone in my office here who's using my office for today, because I invite anyone who's listening essentially who wants to just come work out of the office to have space in the office, use the internet, get coffee, the whole thing, make himself at home. And one of the things that I'm going to do with him is I want to see how he runs his company. So right after you and I are done, I'm going to go talk to him and just have him turn on his computer, show me how he manages it, show me how he communicates with people, the whole thing. I feel like
that's cool.
That is a little insight, and maybe you're getting much more because you're on the inside.
Yeah, no, that's totally it. And for me, it became incredibly apparent that an organization inherits the weaknesses of the person in business, even at the larger scales. And even it's almost amplified at the larger scales. And so I just learned a lot just being on the inside. But it's also allowed, with that insight at an organization of the scale, I'm also allowed the freedom to focus on, you know, doing some of this sort of stuff.
And not just freedom, but the support. Like, who is Alice Puckett?
Yeah, so Alice Puckett is, she's our community manager. She sets up all the podcast interviews for Mobile First. She also assists in all the marketing, which is kind of what I lead at Emerge. And then also, she helped with this, setting this stuff up. So,
I mean, the fact that you work there means that Alice is following up with us, making sure that you're booked here, making sure that we understand why you're worth having on here and what's exciting about you, and sending us articles about you. All right. Do you regret that Alice introduced you to me, because I'm such a hard ass sometimes?
We're getting there.
Is that right? It's okay you know what? What the hell, Andrew? I'm here as your guest.
I love being drilled. No, this is perfect. I don't have a lot of opportunities like this where someone gets to call me out on my BS. So this is really refreshing. And I want to do more of this. And I mean, you're like caliber of person you are. I've looked into your background too to see what type of entrepreneur you are. And so I'm just really inspired. And so I think this is a great thing for me and to be a part of.
All right. Thank you so much for being on here. Anyone who wants to go listen to your podcast, and they're especially a good fit if they're what?
Well, I think for this specifically, Tactic Mobile is going to be a better fit for them. So someone that has an idea for a mobile app, someone who's interested in just learning more about that process.
You show them, we're talking about tacticmobile.com. You're teaching them how to create their own mobile app.
Yes. And I've even put together something special for you, Andrew, and Mixer G. It's at tacticmobile.com/Mixer G. So I have a book that I've created, Tactic Mobile, and everyone can just get that for free. So
you're going to give them the book, and what's the book about?
So the book is about really from start to finish. So my over three years of doing this, all that I've identified to make a successful app, and just all of my podcast interviews on App Academy, digging into that formula. So whether they don't know where to start or they've even started, the whole process to consider, I include, it's a ton of how to examples, tools, resources.
For coding up the app themselves?
Not for coding, for the business side. So the strategical side, building, I mean, you can hire someone, you know, through the resources that you mentioned, you could find a developer to build, but what they're building, is it the right thing? Is it going to be profitable? Is it going to be valuable? See, these are the things that people often miss. And so it's how to validate your concept, the business, and then how it's enabled by the technology. That's something that it's talked about here, but it's outside of it.
And that's at tacticmobile.com/MixerG to get that book, where you get the 3-part formula for creating a mobile app. I see that here. All right, cool. Thanks for doing this, Jordan. And yeah, the two sponsors that I mentioned to you and to everyone else, the first is that company where you can hire your developers to build your app or anything else. They are, is that a little bit of a conflict for you? I'm talking about TopTal?
No.
Because it's individual developers, not an agency that will help you strategize and build your business, build your product, right? So if you guys need developers, go check out toptal.com/MixerG. And if you want to see me use the same software that this golf ball company used, go check out mixergy.com/win, as in you're going to win. Mixergy, I hope you win. Mixergy.com/win. And the tool that we're using and the company that set that up for us is Viral Sweep, and basically you can see how the whole thing works if you go to mixergy.com/win. All right, Jordan, thanks again for doing this.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Bye, everyone.